Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So the plot thickens, or maybe it's better to say the plot thins. Dr. Ford, doctor.
She does have a PhD from USC.
I know. And I'm glad,
medical illustration.
I'm glad you brought it up. It just so we all understand, I don't refer to PhDs as doctor. Dr. Tom Davis, the great Iowa basketball coach.
Yeah,
it's just Tom Davis. If you're a medical doctor, you get doctor. If you've got a PhD in women's studies or botany, or you've got some education PhD, all these superintendent, doctor this and doctor that, yeah. Spare me. Honestly.
Okay. Can we keep the PhD?
So Christine Ford, as I was saying, now says that she is not interested in testifying before the full Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday. She wants an FBI investigation before any such public testimony would occur. Well, that presents a problem because, as Mitch McConnell and others made clear, Monday is her opportunity. So it's put up or shut up time for Christine Ford on Monday.
And the news broke last night on Anderson Cooper, one of the attorneys from the law firm she hired. This one is Lisa Banks.
And since that time, she has been dealing with hate mail, harassment, death threats. So she's been spending her time trying to figure out how to put her life back together, how to protect herself and her family. And there hasn't been an investigation, and these are serious allegations. So if the senators who have come forward and said they want to treat this seriously mean that, then they'll have an investigation. Mm-hmm.
So she wants an FBI investigation first before her client comes down here. In 36 hours, Dan, it's not enough time to change her schedule to get ready to be here, to get to Washington, D.C.
Well, any legitimate investigation is going to happen between now and Monday. This is going to take some time. And what needs to happen is there shouldn't be a rush to a hearing here. There's no reason to do that.
So you're saying even if they say the FBI will investigate and begins an investigation, you're saying Monday there's no way your client would sit down in front of a hearing even if the FBI said, okay, we've looked into it?
It's premature to talk about a hearing on Monday.
Not coming.
Yeah, so they're not coming and it's going to happen. And Brett Kavanaugh is willing to testify on Monday. And if she doesn't want to take advantage of her opportunity at this late stage in a process that has not been rushed, then too bad, so sad. That's how it works. You have an allegation. You felt the need to come forward. Fine. Make your allegation. Do it privately, as apparently was initially done with DiFi back in July. Then the need to come public, felt the need to sit down and do the Washington Post interview. Fine. Now Monday is your opportunity. You don't want to take advantage of it. Fine. Then we're moving on. And by the way, Kavanaugh will get confirmed. Saying hey, that's essentially your opportunity. And if she doesn't want to appear on Monday, then we're going to call the question, vote our shares, and move on.
Yeah, even Bob Corker tweeted out late last night, let's vote. You know, so for Flake and Corker to both be on the same page and say, you know, this is maybe, you know, just a delay tactic.
Of course it's a delay tactic.
On the Dem side.
That's exactly what
this is. Because if she was really victimized, and I mean this, but I know for a fact, if she was truly a victim of this madman's touches or advances, whatever she wants to call it, she would be in D.C., she would want to go now. I mean, Kavanaugh said yesterday, I want to testify tomorrow. I want to get this done. I want to get my reputation back. This did not happen. I was not at the party. He didn't say it lies, but he said he was not at the party.
By the way, there's other statements being issued by people who've been identified by Ms. Ford. Another classmate of Kavanaugh's at Georgetown Prep, identified as his friend PJ, in Ford's accounts of the allegations she lodged against Kavanaugh. His name is Patrick Smith. through a lawyer. He issued a letter to the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, claiming that this is his lawyer's letter, but his client, so Patrick Smith, did not witness or know of any improper conduct by Kavanaugh. I understand I've been identified by Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, not a doctor, as the person she remembers as PJ, who supposedly was present at the party she described in her statements to the Washington Post. I'm issuing the statement today to make it clear to all involved that I have no knowledge of the party in question, nor do I have any knowledge of the allegations of improper conduct she has leveled against Brett Kavanaugh. So, you know, perhaps the worst thing that could happen to her is an actual investigation, because the preponderance of the evidence would seem to corroborate Kavanaugh's denial of the allegations. But regardless, it is absolutely a delaying tactic. If there were any FBI investigation to occur, then it would push off any potential vote until after the midterms, which is what Schumer and the Democrats are trying to do, obviously.
And I can't stand that they're, you know, saying she's being re-victimized because she's had death threats, which all lawmakers have had death threats pretty much, but that so badly that she's had to move out of her house.
Nobody deserves to be threatened. I certainly don't think it's appropriate to threaten her. There's no need for any of that.
Yeah.
People need to control themselves. But this goes in a lot of different directions. One of the reasons she, you know, ostensibly wanted to be anonymous, wanted this to be private, is so she wouldn't receive this kind of scrutiny. But if you want to take out a Supreme Court nominee in the 11th hour, then you can expect some scrutiny.
Yeah.
So that comes with it. I'm sorry. There were choices made all along the way. For 35 years, this could have been 12 years as he's sitting on the appellate court, D.C. Court of Appeals, and she chooses now. And so there is scrutiny that's attendant to that. I'm sorry. That's just the way the political process works. She's an adult. She's a 50-year-old woman. She understands this. So, again, that doesn't excuse any boorish or threatening or violent conduct in her direction. That's inappropriate. But so I'm sorry that's happening to her, I suppose. But what are we supposed to do about it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. What Democrats are doing about it is what they're fond of doing, trying to make this a cultural touchstone by demagoguing it. DiFi, who she first brought this to.
Yeah. She sat on this information.
Nicole, she wanted to protect her privacy, respect her wishes. Okay, fine. Here's
but
what
she still sat on it.
I know, but this is her explanation. And okay. DiFi yesterday saying, I don't know what's true.
This is a woman, and I really believe, who's been profoundly impacted by this. Now, I can't say everything's truthful. I don't know.
Yeah. Well. Okay. That separates you from your colleague on the Senate Judiciary, Kamala Harris from California. I mean, this person is a piece of work.
Is it Kamala, Kamala, Shamizel, Hatzeron Incorporated?
I've heard it's Kamala and Kamala.
Okay.
So it just depends on which syllable you want to put the accent. she was on CBS this morning, yesterday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an officer of the court, former state attorney general. Listen to this woman.
Would you be able to bring a case like this, 36 years old, to trial?
Potentially. But, you know, I think that the issue here is that this is not about necessarily a criminal investigation. This is also about what we need to do around a background investigation into who Brett Kavanaugh really is. The American public deserves to know the character of someone who will serve for his entire life on the highest court in our country.
Yeah, I know. That's why we had the hearing.
The hearing. That's why. Yeah.
Also,
3-day hearing. Okay.
A follow-up that was missed, a statement that should have been challenged. Possibly you could bring this case in a court of law.
What is it? There's no physical evidence. It's just a he said, she said, and it was 36 years ago.
Right. There's no possibility you could bring this in a court of law. And that should have been, she should have been pushed on that. And Kamala Harris persisted. How about as it pertains to the six FBI background checks that have already been done on Kavanaugh.
I want to know about this guy's background, and the American public wants to know about his background. We need to know, are we about to put somebody on the United States Supreme Court who committed a sexual assault?
So the FBI has done six background checks. Are you calling into question the integrity of the FBI?
No, I don't think we have to go there, Nora.
Well, I think we do. Six FBI background checks. And then...
And the sexual assault rhetoric that they're using, it was not that.
Then she gives the nothing to gain talking point, nothing to gain. But listen to what else she says. So she's open-minded. She wants to hear from both, right, so that you can determine where, best as possible, where the truth lies? Not exactly.
What is your process to determine who's telling the truth here?
Well, listen, I think it's going to be about, it comes down to credibility, to your point, Gail, and it's going to be about listening to what each party has to say. But I believe her. Listen, first of all, anybody who...
Wait a second. I want to listen to what both sides have to say. It's going to come down to my judgment as their credibility. By the way, I've already decided.
I believe her.
What the hell? This is an attorney.
She's Attorney General of California.
I mean, these people are without shame between her and Cory Booker.
But, you know, I mean, real quick, President
and
Trump.
And Dick Blumenthal, who we'll get to in a second.
President Trump, he has remained measured and confident through all this and just very open-minded. Because sometimes he can get a little testy and knee-jerk reactions, but he's just, you know, we have to let this process take its course. Love him for it.
Andy on 88.
A couple of questions. Good morning, guys. How are you this morning? Not questions, really statements. Feinstein held on to this for a few months or something of that nature. So some of this 11th hour crap should be dropped on her lap if this young lady wanted to be kept anonymous. Well, apparently Feinstein decided that that wasn't going to happen. So this is on her.
No. Ford decided to come forward and not be anonymous.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then, if that be the case, I must have missed that part of the news. But
well, reporters were outside her house, and she decided to own the story. And
She decided to give an interview to the Washington Post.
Right, that's why she she wanted to own the story and say people are talking
about it. The other part of this is, if we can't for just a minute grab a hold of things, have the investigation, go through with it, get him on the Supreme Court, complete the investigation. The only person who has a face to lose then, realistically, is Kavanaugh if something turns up, or her if something doesn't.
Yeah.
And the story ends.
Thanks for the call, Andy. No. Well, we're regarding it, do an investigation and go through this whole bureaucratic process again, do a seventh FBI background check, have the FBI investigate and interview, you know, the 200 classmates who signed a letter and Julia Louis-Dreyfus and everybody in Kavanaugh. No. Uh-uh. You have an allegation. Right. Mm-hmm. You have an opportunity. Make your case.
And if she's a real victim, she would make her case and affront her alleged accuser.
This is a delay tactic by the Democrats to push this off. Plain and simple. And Republicans should call it out plain and simple and vote their shares plain and simple. After her opportunity comes and goes on Monday. Mark on the South Side.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Should the Republicans vote this out of committee and then the Democrats realize they have the votes to confirm Judge Kavanaugh? You watch how fast she shows up in Washington to testify.
Yeah, we'll see. Thanks, Mark. I don't know. She seems to be a little skittish all of a sudden. Joe in Hoffman Estates.
I think the professor realizes that if she goes to the Senate and testifies and gets caught lying, she's going to end up in trouble. The Washington Post is one thing, but to sit in front of the Senate and say this happened, that happened, and it finds out that it didn't, her life's going to be in shambles. She opened a can of worms.
All right, thanks, Joe.
And her attorney was of the mindset that she and Brett would be sitting at the same table. And Anderson Cooper had to correct her and say, no, that's not how this works. They're not going to be making contact. Point to the person who you believe tried to grope you. It's not going to be one of those moments.
Greg in Schaumburg.
This wrap everything up. This is exactly what the Democrats are going to do. And on everything, they've now discredited another Supreme Court justice. So, Dan and Amy, if it makes it out of the Judiciary Committee, we'll probably lose Flake, right?
No.
No, he last night, it's at midnight, he tweeted, and he's in.
Yeah, if she
doesn't show up, he's going to vote, yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. It's then we probably will get this Supreme Court justice, but this is another one that is discredited. But let's assume these guys change, and this does go back. This is what this election about is coming up on the midterms, everybody, and we've got to work like crazy.
Thanks, Greg.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Picking up our discussion of the Kavanaugh confirmation as the plot thins with Christine Ford now saying that she's, through attorneys, she won't testify on Monday. She's demanding an FBI investigation before she were to testify in any form or fashion. And Senate Republicans making it clear Monday is her opportunity to address the Senate Judiciary Committee or forever hold her peace, at least as it relates to this confirmation, because then they're going to move forward with the vote.
President Trump said yesterday that he doesn't think the FBI should get involved.
I don't think the FBI really should be involved because they don't want to be involved. If they wanted to be, I would certainly do that.
So in lieu of Ms. Ford seeming to walk back from the spotlight and from this political theater that was set up for Monday, you've had Democrat senators have to fill the void of political theater. You heard from Kamala Harris. She's reserving judgment until Monday,
but
except
she's
already concluded that Christine Ford is telling the truth and Kavanaugh should be stopped. Mazie Hirono, she is a Democrat senator from Hawaii. She had this to say yesterday.
Of course it helps that there are women on that committee, but you know what? I expect the men in this country and the men in this committee, and many of them, believe me, because we all signed on to this letter to demand an FBI investigation. But really, guess who's perpetuating all of these kinds of actions? It's the men in this country. And I just want to say to the men in this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing for a change. Okay, you can see I'm a little upset by this, you know.
She's mentally deranged.
So,
that woman.
Men in this country, you're perpetuating all of this. What is she talking about? You're perpetuating it all. Shut up and step up. Okay. So the men on that committee and Republican men on that committee, no need to say a word. Just shut up, step up, and vote, and we can move on. And Mazie Hirono can continue with her histrionics, and the voters of Hawaii, particularly the male,
elect that woman?
Particularly the male ones, can decide if she should continue to serve the next time she's up for re-election. Sort of an embarrassing statement. But again, you're talking about a party and its leading lights in the Senate who are beyond shame. They cannot be shamed. You think Mazie Hirono is ridiculous? She is. Let me reintroduce you to Senator Missing in Action. That'd be Dick Blumenthal from Connecticut.
Who? What's his name? I haven't seen him in a...
You remember, he lied about his service in Vietnam
when he
was Attorney General of Connecticut. Another Attorney General elevated to Senate, like Kamala Harris. Here's what he had to say about the prospect of Kavanaugh on the high court.
The impact on the United States Supreme Court going forward with this nomination will cast a shadow and stain on an institution that depends for its power on credibility and trust. It has no armies. It has no police force. Mm-hmm. It's obeyed because of its credibility and the American people's belief in its integrity. And this nomination would forever stain the Supreme Court in a way that I think may well be irreparable.
Okay. This guy has no credibility to be even making that kind of a statement.
So just understand what Dick Blumenthal, another officer of the court, Senator Missing in Action, is saying. An indelible stain will be left on the court by the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. And it's not Dred Scott v. Sanford. It's not Korematsu versus the United States. But Brett Kavanaugh will forever undermine the legitimacy of the Supreme Court were he to be confirmed. Is that a measured statement? Is that a thoughtful statement? Does that fall anywhere in the broad parameters of reasonable? Are you tired yet of the overheated, hyperventilating, virtue signaling Democrat at the federal level and the minor leaguers here in Chicago and Illinois? Isn't it silly? They may not be able to be embarrassed, but I think reasonable people should be embarrassed for them. It's a joke. Verlon on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, I will not shut up, but I will step up. How about this?
All right.
Clarence Thomas, Herman Cain, Mitt Romney, Donald Trump, Roy Moore, and now Kavanaugh. And what all these candidates got in common, after these women make accusations, they magically disappear. When are we going to get tired of the Democrats trotting out the same old, dried-up, prune, old hags? You know, whether it's Gloria Allred or whatever flavor of the month, you know, it's just another face, same dance. Let's get this behind us. Monday, she's not going to show up. Let's put pressure on these senators to vote. Let's get this guy confirmed, and let's get on with our business.
All right. Thanks for the call, Verlon.
I would not put Mitt Romney in that same category of men that he just listed.
I mean, the whole point of these discussions is they're case specific. So, right, I would not. All of the names that were mentioned are very different cases.
Yeah.
But that's the whole point. It's fact specific. I will never, never accede to the demand that I should believe what a whole category of people says about anything with respect to making allegations of misconduct. If a man says an allegation occurred, you should believe him. If a woman says it, if a black person says it, if a white person says it, if a Latino, this is nonsense. I mean, are people 3 years old? Who buys this stuff? Again, the virtue signaling vacuity of the left. It is embarrassing to right-thinking people across the political spectrum, or it should be. Rita in River Forest.
You know, this story has more holes in it than Swiss cheese. As a woman, I remember everything bad that happened to me in high school, and this woman doesn't remember where she was, who else was with her. This letter has sat in Dianne Feinstein's drawer since July, and now it's just coming out. And has anyone looked at her attorney's political donations and where she leans? I mean, the story, every time you turn around, there's another hole in the story.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Thanks for the call, Rita. And we know that she signed on to some letter with other academics opposing the family separation policy at the border and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think it seems clear, as you would, just the percentage basis, you would sort of guess that as an academic, she leans left and is probably not a huge fan of President Trump.
But any victim of alleged sexual assault, I'm telling you, would bite at the chance to come forward to seek justice. And instead, now she's, well, no, I need the FBI. No, it's a stall tactic. I get that. But that's what makes me feel. I used to believe her. Yesterday, I believed her. I believed her that something happened, but maybe she had the wrong guys. Now I'm thinking nothing happened to her, that she might be possibly making this entire thing up.
Nick in Northwest Indiana.
Yeah, how you doing? Good morning, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
To what Ms. Jacobson just said, I don't believe it's a stall tactic. I believe the Democrats and Dr. Ford don't want an investigation. They need an investigation to hopefully corroborate or discover corroborating pieces of her allegations.
Yeah, like a fishing expedition. Interesting. Okay, thanks for the call, Nick. Bruno in Naperville.
Yeah, one of the reasons why this particular nomination is so important is because he's probably the best that we're going to get for the next 2 years. If he's barely going to squeak by with the current Senate composition, all they need to do, they don't even need to lose control of the Senate. They just need to lose a couple seats, and they're probably going to have to make some compromises over the next 2 years before the 2020 election to just get their candidates approved.
Well, it's possible. Thanks for the call, Bruno. I mean, I mentioned this yesterday when we were discussing it. The supposition that's out there is that if Republicans maintain control of the Senate on November 6th, then Clarence Thomas will retire next year and provide that appointment for Trump. And if they don't, he'll push on. But now you're, you know, Thomas is 70. He clearly wants to, you know, enjoy.
Spend more time in the RV.
In the RV with the wife, yeah. And so now you're talking about, well, then what happens in 20? And if a Democrat, if Trump isn't reelected, if Democrat, then you're 4 more years. And then it becomes like this marathon between Ginsburg and Thomas and perhaps others on the court, both for health and also just personal predilection in terms of retirement. So, you know, we're not done in Trump's first term with Supreme Court dynamics. And if Trump were to win re-election, you can guarantee we're not done with this, which is why the precedent that is being set here is so critically important. Yemi on the north side.
Hi, good morning, Yemi. Good morning, Dan.
Morning.
Just like my brother from the south side, I won't shut up. So what we know so far is Democratic tactic is to delay the confirmation. And what we know so far is the woman won't come forward. But what we don't know is when the book deal and when she's going to contest for election in California is going to come. And anything from Washington Post? Are you serious? Am I going to believe that? Come on. I believe people is going to turn out in November to elect more Republicans to be able to support Donald Trump. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Yemi. Appreciate it. Yeah, he might be onto something, a book deal, elevating her her standing in the world of academia.
She could go on a speaker's tour. Maybe that's what Anita Hill does.
She can move from Palo Alto University to Stanford, maybe, you know, upgrade.
Well, she has been, you know, teaching some courses at Stanford. Mm-hmm. But is there any way she could do a phone interview? I mean, I'm just thinking out loud. What other options? Could they have a closed-door hearing?
Fine, do it in private. We don't need the political theater of it. It would be more substantive if it's in private. There would be less preening by politicians. I don't care. Go ahead.
And Susan Collins suggested yesterday that Kavanaugh's lawyer cross-examine Ford, then Ford's lawyer cross-examine Kavanaugh and leave the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee out of it. Yeah. Which is ridiculous.
Susan
you have a job to do,
needs
lady.
To stop watching reruns of Perry Mason. Yes, it is the U.S. Senate, the senators that have the advice and consent responsibility.
Right, it's their job.
Jay in Lowell, Indiana.
Yeah, I just want to ask one thing. Why is it if Brett Kavanaugh did something when he was 17 years old, yet and it's a big stain on America and the Supreme Court, yet here's Bill Clinton as an adult and in public office raping women, and Ted Kennedy raping women and actually leaving a woman to die and drown. But those two are okay. Those are two of the biggest stains in American history, but they're off. But the Democratic Party's all right with that. It's a joke.
That's a good
Thanks,
point.
Jay. Mike in Bolingbrook.
Yeah, I agree with all the callers. And, you know, you got Waters on the West Coast and Pocahontas on the East Coast, and they're actually crying wolf for the actual victims that have a substantial claim to some of these sexual abuse claims from the past and from the present, just like the guy in the, I think it's Minnesota, the DNC vice chairman.
Keith Ellison.
How come that doesn't hit the news? I mean, it was a little spot on the radar, and then this Kavanaugh thing just buried everything. It's just, it's absolute ridiculous and insult to your intelligence, if you have any kind of sense of intelligence with what's going on. I mean, I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
This is the Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Since we're doing some compare and contrast with respect to the Kavanaugh controversy, obviously it most closely parallels the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill saga some almost 30 years ago, 1991. You were going to hear from Anita Hill on this, right? Yeah, the press was going to make their pages and airwaves open to Anita Hill, right?
Yeah, she had an op-ed yesterday.
New York Times did so. Anita Hill, who was an academic at Brandeis.
But at the time, she was a law professor at University of Oklahoma, correct? When she said this sexual harassment happened, alleged sexual harassment.
Well, she said it happened while they were both at the EEOC. And then after that alleged sexual harassment occurred, she followed Clarence Thomas to the Department of Education, which was one of the things that undermined her story. Here's what Anita Hill says. We'll present the case from the other side.
Okay.
Not the, you know, vacuous virtue signaling pap from the Dick Blumenthals and Maisie Hirano's. That's entertaining and instructive. But here's an argument for the investigation that is being demanded by Christine Ford and Democrats. See if it persuades you. Today, the public expects better from our government than we got in 1991, writes Anita Hill, when our representatives performed in ways that gave employers permission to mishandle workplace harassment complaints throughout the following decades. The biggest takeaway from the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Thomas Hill hearings for me was clearly Chris Farley's impersonation of Senator Howell Heflin.
We have to get that.
That
there's a homework assignment for Justin. Yeah, that was
the other than Thomas's actual confirmation, Chris Farley doing Howell Heflin was the best thing to come out of the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill saga.
But I remember being glued to my television set and watching as much as I could of that hearing.
Yeah, it's a spectacle.
And asking my parents, "Well, who do you believe? What's going on?" You know.
Here's Anita Hill's argument. Our interest in the integrity of the Supreme Court and eliminating sexual misconduct are entirely compatible. Here's what we should do. Select a neutral investigative body with experience in sexual misconduct cases that will investigate the incident in question and present its findings to the committee.
She doesn't even want
the FBI. So they're not on the same page here. Outcomes in such investigations are more reliable, less likely to be perceived as tainted by partisanship. That's number one. Number two, rush these hearings.
Okay.
Doing so would only signal that sexual harassment accusations are not important. Hastily appraising the situation would very likely lead to facts being overlooked that are necessary for the Senate and the public to evaluate. Number three, refer to Christine Blasey Ford by her name.
Call me by my name. Wasn't that a movie? Call me by my name.
Say my name. Say my name. She was once anonymous, but no longer is. Dr. Blasey is not simply Judge Kavanaugh's accuser. Dr. Blasey is a human being with a life of her own. She deserves the respect of being addressed and treated as a whole person.
Okay. What are they talking? What do they want? Dr. Christine Blasey Ford?
This is,
or Dr. Ford? What do they mean? Call her by her name.
What are you talking about? You're talking about a leftist female icon here, Anita Hill. I'm going to take her word seriously.
They're not calling her that professor chick from California.
Yeah, right.
They're using her name.
Like Amy Elizabeth Jacobson. Yeah.
I'm
not calling her doctor because she's not a medical doctor. Sorry.
Doctor?
Miss Hill. Yeah. Dr. John Coctosen. By the way, back in the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas, since the Dems like to, and the left likes to rewrite history, and since so many of them have the opportunity to rewrite history, they do so. But a little look back, after both testified in 1991, 58% of Americans polled in a New York Times CBS survey believed Clarence Thomas over Anita Hill. The Washington Post editorial board did not find Anita Hill's accusations credible. They wrote at the time, after 3 days of extraordinary testimony and procedure, it seemed to us that the weaknesses in the account Professor Hill set out were not dispelled, and sufficient additional support for her position did not materialize. The Post arguing for Clarence Thomas's confirmation.
Even then, Senator Joe Biden voted in favor of Clarence Thomas, and he would not allow Anita Hill's lie detector test results to be submitted.
Mm-hmm.
He has since apologized for doing that, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Such a pansy.
You've got to recast things now in a different era to adapt. And
to appease your constituents in case he runs for prez.
Yeah, pander. Hill also wanted to be anonymous at first. She initially refused to go through an FBI interview, but eventually relented, sent a personal statement about her allegations to the committee. The FBI did its report about Hill's claims. Then she testified before the committee. And here's where it ran into problems. Remember her infamous allegations about the Coke can and pornographic material?
Yeah, that he wanted her to. Can you just refresh my memory about the Coke can?
Long Dong Silver. Does that refresh your memory, Ms. Jacobson? Dr. Jacobson.
Does this have anything to do with Mario Brothers?
We'll get to the other somebody else's dong later, but we're talking about this now. No, she said a Coke can, like that, like a pubic hair in a Coke can. Remember that?
Oh, that's
what she said.
Okay, I'm having PTSD.
I'm just saying.
Yes, and that he tried to make her watch pornography with.
Yes, okay. He referenced it, but
referenced it. Oh.
The point is that those salacious allegations, were not in the affidavit that she provided the FBI. The FBI agents who interviewed Hill said in their affidavit, in her testimony to the in her interview with the FBI, she never revealed those details. The FBI agents provided in their affidavit to the committee, to clear that up, that she never mentioned the details to them, these, you know, sort of prurient details. She also signed another signed affidavit by the FBI at the time, described how Hill revealed in her public testimony she made several telephone contacts with committee staffers before she prepared her statement for the committee, but she failed to mention the phone calls during her interview with the FBI. So this is where Anita Hill's credibility started to come apart, in addition to her inability to really explain why she followed Thomas from the EEOC, where she was allegedly suffering this harassment, to the Department of Education. She was a career civil servant, so she was insulated from politics, basically, in terms of her employment. Mm-hmm. And her the best she could come up with was she thought the Department of Education was going to be abolished because Reagan had made that a campaign promise.
Oh, so she was going to take a job that was going to be going nowhere anyway?
It was all rather weak tea, and Anita Hill, David Brock has become now this kind of shrill leftist operative. But at the time he wrote his book, The Real Anita Hill, it was, the facts are the facts. I don't care what his political persuasion is now or was then. Lot of, political motives, a lot of career aspirations. So just to Kamala Harris's, nobody has anything to gain and Ms. Ford has nothing to gain by coming forward.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's not at all clear based on past incidents of this sort, is it now? Depends on what you want to go through, I suppose, and what you're trying to get. Mark and Glen Ellen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, yeah, Dan and Amy, hi. I was wondering about that comment where they said that an investigation should be done, it should be slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
The investigation could have started back in July had they wanted to really pursue this to the utmost.
Yep.
Well, that's true, Mark. Thanks for the call. The DFI could have given this letter to Grassley on the condition that he maintain the accuser's anonymity, which DFI is now saying was the reason she did not bring this forward sooner. And you're right. The FBI could have looked into that in the course of their half a dozen background checks on Kavanaugh between July and present. But they decided to spring this on the committee now, and she decided to come forward now. Why? Because
this
one
is
would,
the 11th hour.
Well, one could argue, right, this is the last-ditch effort.
This is it.
And you don't want time, because time and the ability to gather all the details could make it muddier, where just a salacious allegation and the histrionics you're seeing from Democrats at least gives them, they believe, some political value in a confirmation fight they're going to lose that they can turn around and use to motivate their base to come out on November 6th.
Or could they try and stall this till past the midterms and hoping that the House will flip to into Democratic hands?
Yeah, I don't think they really believe that that's possible, but they're playing that hand. They're trying to bluff Republicans, and all they need is a couple of weak sisters in the Republican ranks, like Jeff Flake, to fold, and they actually could, you know, bluff their way to postponing this. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen, but that's their play. So that's the best outcome for them, is the is Republicans fold in the face of this bluff, that they, which is what it is. And then secondarily is what I said just a minute ago. So if I can't get the whole loaf, then I'll take half a loaf. And the half a loaf is we're going to lose this confirmation. We don't have the numbers. He's going to get confirmed. But we can make a Shiite show out of the whole thing.
Right.
And then we can use that for political advantage to whip our base into a frenzy in the last 50 days before the election.
Well, those worried about Flake, he tweeted around midnight last night, "When Dr. Ford came forward, I said that her voice should be heard and asked the Judiciary Committee to delay its vote. It did so. I now implore Dr. Ford to accept the invitation for this Monday in a public or private setting."
Yeah. But McConnell, Monday's your opportunity.
Right.
Period, full stop. So prove up, or in the immortal words of Maisie Hirano, shut up. Tom in Deer Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning. You know, everything comes at us fast, but try to think about things for a couple days. And based on what you just read about Anita Hill, come to the conclusion that we have a person out there, and it's just my opinion, person out there that can figure out a way to make a name for herself, be the leader of a cause, the leader of a movement, help to screw up the institution of the Senate confirmation process, and then the inevitable, like another caller said, the book tour, the movie, the university position. So to me, I've concluded it's all pretty darn cynical.
Thanks, Tom. What do you? I appreciate the call. Mike on the north side.
Hey, good morning. It's funny you mentioned Weak Sisters, because I think that's the name of the bowling team at Jim Durkin and Bill Brady down at Springfield.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you something similar happened to me when I was at the young, tender age. I think I was in my early 50s.
Sure.
And I was with a member of Chicago's media. I had a drink, and I lost consciousness, and I kind of remember some kind of wet kissing. And then I woke up, and Bunky was licking my face.
Yeah. All right. All right, Mike. We'll ask the FBI
liquor.
To investigate those allegations. Thank you for the call.
That's kind of, I feel like Bunky's cheating on me, and I don't like it.
The other Mike in Crown Point.
Morning, guys. Unless some investigative firm has a time machine, there's no way to prove or disprove anything. They know that. And I'm willing to bet you they've got a couple people warming up in the bullpen. If this one fails, guess what? In 2 days later, there'll be somebody else coming up and making similar claims.
Mm.
It just never ends. They're just trying to delay it.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Good morning, Dan and Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Quoting from Full Disclosure, it has a huge mushroom head, like a toadstool. I lay there annoyed that I was getting blanked by a guy with Yeti pubes and
please stop it. What does that even mean? What
dong is like the mushroom character in Mario Kart. It may have been the least impressive sex I'd ever had, but clearly he didn't share that opinion. Now you don't need to read Stormy Daniels' tell-all, Full Disclosure.
I couldn't even clickbait on that article because it's so disgusting. Nobody needs to know about anybody's heathen region, and it makes me want to become a lesbian.
Okay.
Wow, right. Did I see that?
That is a real powerful reaction to Stormy Daniels' memoir.
Christian Station. Nobody needs to know about Bill Clinton's junk, Trump's. I mean, keep that to yourself. My goodness, nothing's sacred anymore.
Yeah, but you don't want to know about
toady, stooly things and puby.
Mushroom head.
Sick. Okay, stop.
Yeti pubes.
I'm not.
Like the mushroom character in Mario Kart.
Go to my head.
I don't know the details of Paul McCartney's heathen region, as you describe it. I do know you know, that he likes to work it over. Okay. And that's according to him.
I mean, I have a guy question for you. Do guys, that's not normal behavior. I mean, men don't get together in groups and do that.
Not in my friend circle.
I mean,
I can only
really
speak
do,
to my personal experience.
You know,
so,
on your
no.
gaming nights or in your gambling nights. I mean, nobody does.
We play poker. That's not a metaphor.
Okay.
We cards. Texas Hold'em.
I mean, because Paul McCartney said it like it's just, you know, mm-hmm. today it's going to be partly sunny, and this is what we did when we got together.
Yeah. Well, he took a time out from abusing himself to pen a new song that's critical of Trump.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a mad captain sailing this boat we're all on. I can't do a British accent. I can't
We've
sound like
a mad captain on this boat we're all on.
And that you cannot either. Thank
but
you.
I can try.
So I'm just going to read it in my, you know, regular voice. But that's the Paul McCartney song you want to check out.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
All right, so that's our dong
done?
Update
we, oh
for,
my gosh.
For Wednesday.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
They got the beat, the campus beat, the campus beat. Yeah, the campus beat.
Dan and Amy, and this story comes to us from you.
I'm sure to do that.
You still have the dream of sending the lads and lasses to the Ivy League?
No.
Yale? No. God and man at Yale? No God, no men at Yale these days.
Yeah, no, I'm all right.
Bill Buckley spinning in his grave, looking down quizzically at what's going on at his alma mater. A Yale Daily News survey of freshman students at the university found that more students of the class of 2022, more freshmen, mm-hmm. identify as LGBTQ than as conservative. Sort of a stunning contrast, since a 2018 Gallup survey has like 4.5% of the country identifies on the LGBTQ spectrum.
So lesbian, LG, gay, bisexual, transsexual, transgender, and Q for queer?
Questioning.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, it could be either.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I do queer. Not mean to offend it. Questioning.
No, queer or questioning. No, queer is a term that's used by those who identify as such.
I think that's an actual term. Transgender is the new gay, because gay is not enough. Now you got to. I have three people at my church transitioning right now.
Historically, less than 2%. You know, it's up 4.5% according to a 2018 Gallup poll. I think a lot of that is social construction, but okay, 4.5%. Mm-hmm. Of course, what the public believes the percentage is like 25% because it's so ubiquitous.
What's in your face?
Yes. Wait, hey, are you reading from the Stormy Daniels memoir again?
Seriously, stop with the Mario Kart.
You better if we're going to read from the Stormy Daniels thing, you better have the vomit thing queued up.
Oh, no. Yeah, no.
That.
Please. Oh, my God. I'm going to get sick. And there's another few listeners that hate that sound drop. So cut it out.
Well, which do you want? Do you want to talk about Trump's junk, or do you want, I mean, you can't have it both. If one comes
Justin, don't make me come in there.
All right. So getting back to Yale, 864 respondents, 9% identified as somewhat conservative, 1% saying very conservative, 5% of respondents, Yale freshmen, identify as gay, 9% as bisexual or transsexual, 3% opted not to answer, 8% identified as asexual, spectrum, or questioning their sexual orientation.
I'm sorry for interrupting. So how many 8% were asexual?
Asexual, they reproduce through spores or budding, apparently. And asexual, ace spectrum.
What's a spectrum?
I think it was a Marvel superhero, but I don't know what it means in this context. or questioning their sexual orientation. So there's the one version of the Q. So let's see, that's 5 plus 9 plus 8. That's 22% on the spectrum. One in five Yale freshmen, LGBTQ spectrum, 4.5% of the population writ large on the spectrum. So that would say five times the incidence in the American public at large. LGBTQ in Yale's freshman class. sort of remarkable, isn't it? Oh, by the way, the ideological monolith that is Yale extends to its faculty, of course. Yale professors, 75% identify as liberal, less than 10% identify as conservative. 90% of faculty members in the humanities identify as liberal. You want to send your kids to Yale? What is it, diversity on campus? Right, never intellectual diversity. But they're trying. They're trying to eliminate diversity, intellectual diversity. Here's one approach, University of Maryland. Remember when Oak Park River Forest had their, like, their blacks or minorities only?
Right, meeting in the gym after school.
Yeah, like the race discussion session.
Yeah, just, you know, how do you feel? Do you feel comfortable here? They just wanted to check in.
Mm-hmm. University of Maryland had an idea to do the same, but with white people. White awake. White awake. Social justice training to provide a safe space for white students only to learn about race issues. And now they're apologizing because anything white only is, you know, racist by definition. People arguing white people need a safe space because, of course, they're privileged, and then you just descend into all of the social justice intersectionality madness. The safe space, though, do you want to become a better ally? The purpose of this forum, this White Awake event, safe space for white students only, was for them to fold in with the racial identity politics of other groups on campus and just support their hatred of white people and their promotion of this, you know, white privilege narrative that has become stock and trade to the left. You get it? So there's Maryland off the list. There's Yale off the list for Peyton and Eli. How about Stanford?
You know who teaches there sometimes. Dr. Christine Blasey Ford.
Not a doctor. She's at Palo Alto University. Maybe she'll get upgraded to Stanford after her efforts with respect to Kavanaugh. We'll see.
Relationship to them.
In an effort to distance itself from Father Junipero Serra, who was canonized by Pope Francis, by the way, 18th century leader of the California mission system that provided some of the land for the California university system, like, say, Stanford. They are erasing Sarah's name from two dormitories and its own mailing address on Sarah Mall. Hey. Because Father Sarah is charged with, as leader of the California mission system, helping to destroy Native culture throughout the state. 21 missions were built by Spanish colonists in the late 1700s, in which Native people were kept as slave labor and punished if they tried to escape. Sarah founded the first nine. The system contributed to the destruction of cultural, economic, and religious practices of indigenous communities, left many tribal communities decimated, wrote a standing committee charged with recommending whether or not to scrub Sarah's name from university buildings and roads. Tyler Cohen had a good rejoinder to this over at the Marginal Revolution. Well, if Stanford's serious about this, let's get beyond virtue signaling. Why don't you reappropriate some of the land on which Stanford sits to those tribal communities? Right. You want to do that?
Practice what you preach.
Mm.
Or let the kids move out and have them move into their dorms. And they could live in tents like some of them do at UC Santa Cruz. They opt out of dorms and live in tents and trees and
UC Santa Cruz,
the banana slugs.
Banana slugs.
Yeah, my cousin went there.
Yeah, that's the only reason you know it. Whereas I know all of the Division
she gave me
One
a banana
nicknames.
Slug. Oh, you know all of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Division
One. Yeah, let's go. You want to go alphabetical order?
Let's try. Okay, throw one out.
Ah, Division One. Well.
You know, you can't even name a Division One school. And I know all the nicknames.
There's so many. Iowa.
Oh, come on.
Not Iowa State.
The Cyclones.
Okay, just checking.
Please.
And real quick, Evergreen.
You're going to have to get outside of big conferences.
I know, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac 12. Real quick, Evergreen State College. You know where it started all.
Yeah, Brett Weinstein. Well,
yeah.
It started all.
If things continue to deteriorate, the college is going to implode. They have catastrophic enrollment crisis. Half of the freshman class is enrolled So they've lost thousands of students.
Good. The only way things will change is if people vote with their pocketbooks and don't support these totalitarian re-education centers masquerading as institutions of higher learning. That's what they are.
And incoming freshman class, 350 students. 350. That's it. And taxpayers want, you know, them to, you know, stop funding Evergreen State College, too.
Yeah.
So that's going to stop soon because the college is going to be no more.
Well, Matt Groening is going to have to buy the college if that place is going to survive. Their most famous graduate. Michael in Andersonville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
So it's funny that you guys brought this up as a segment because I had a long conversation yesterday with a coworker about this in particular, especially when it comes to the gay community and the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we spend so much time within the gay community and the black community trying to squawk and just be rah, 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 we need equality and all this. But that's not really the problem because, especially here in Chicago, because we've made it, it's a very liberal city and anything goes. It's just we are an even playing field. And I just feel like we would have more respect from the world if we just stopped labeling ourselves and stopped putting ourselves out there where the media and every other person on the planet who exploits both communities by thinking the way that they do about how we are and stereotypicalizing the actual community and thinking that that is how we are because we're not all like that. And I feel like if we showed up and just acted like what the norm should be or is, I feel like we would have more respect and we would stop having these conversations about being gay or being black. Why can't we just show up at the table and just drop it and just say, hey, I'm me.
Yeah.
This is it. Yeah. Like it.
Absolutely. I mean, well, it becomes difficult on college campuses where they set aside like LGBTQ and the rest of the alphabet soup of orientations, separate, you know, only dorms, like only for the dorms by sexual orientation.
They have that.
Exactly. It's so, first of all, it's social segregation.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, there's no other way to describe it. You want to be part of the world and you want to be have a seat at the table, but you do everything in your power to separate yourself from the norm.
Right.
So which is it? You can't have
themselves.
It both ways.
Well,
there's a University of Northern Iowa has an all-gay transgender dorm.
The Panthers.
But what for? There's no purpose.
Well,
for
because
it.
They wanted, you know, that. They wanted to be accepting. Separated from everybody else. That's what they wanted. So they're segregating themselves. But then, it's scaring away other students from going to that school. Because why can't we all just get along?
Well, Michael, it's interesting. I mentioned this last week, but there was this great tweet in response to a Salon.com piece. I think it was Salon.com. Maybe it was Mother Jones. One of the two. It doesn't matter. Lori Lightfoot. If Lori Lightfoot gets elected, she'll be the first openly gay mayor of the city of Chicago. And the response to that was, when will Chicago get its first openly competent mayor? Like the conversation that the overemphasis, the obsessing about identity, sexual, racial, religious, precludes a serious conversation about competence, vision, skill sets. And this is why our city and our state are in such shambles, I would argue. I'd be interested in your take.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, I work in Andersonville, so they have posters that are all over. If I could take a picture of it, I will send it to your email so you can kind of talk about it.
Right.
They call her the Trifecta Messiah.
Right.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
There's posters that say it because she's a black, female, gay person. And it's like, okay, I get it. I get that we need this change for certain communities, and they feel like they're being empowered. But instead of focusing on the three things that make her weak, because that's, in my opinion, that's what makes her weak, and that just appeals to people because of their gender bias or their gay, I call it gay capitalism because that's exactly what it is, that they just capitalize on our communities. The Democrats prey on us without a doubt because they are very weak-minded. And if they just focused on what her education is, the things that she did good within her career, I feel like she would have a bigger footing and be more respected. I mean, as a candidate, if I was her, I would feel like, wow, this is all they want to know me for? is that I'm a black woman and I'm gay? What about all my accomplishments?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
What about my college years? What did I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I just don't understand it. Being a gay man in Chicago makes me feel like I don't identify with the community because I don't agree with their politics and I don't agree with their ideals.
Yeah, it's weird.
Because I am a conservative and I am a Trump supporter.
It's weird how people would choose not to be three-dimensional or not to be treated as a three-dimensional person. I'm just this one dimension. It's weird that people would choose that, I guess because it's celebrated and so you get positive feedback and so that's what you emphasize. I don't really understand the psychology, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, break away from what you feel. I mean, that's your legacy that you're leaving behind. You are that vanilla.
Thanks.
That's all you have in life.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Appreciate it. By the way, you know, I'm also referenced in my circle as the trifecta messiah.
What?
Because I'm skilled in the arts of alcohol, tobacco, and firearm use. Consumption and use. Larry and Bartlett, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, first of all, Dan, how do I join your group? I'll even pay a couple of dollars to join that group.
No. All right, we'll talk.
A new movement.
But I have to say, Dan, I'm a little disappointed you are so politically insensitive.
Mm-hmm.
You keep using the term college freshman. I don't think we have freshmen anymore. Don't we have fresh male, fresh female, fresh
people?
Something or other, fresh trans, whatever all those other adjectives or adverbs are. I'm sorry, I had grammar too long ago to remember the proper term. But you really have to start getting accurate. And you also can't say junior or senior because that infers age discrimination. So, Dan, you have to start fixing your tone of voice.
You fell right into my trap, Larry, when I said freshman. I spell it freshmyn.
Oh.
See?
Actually, that doesn't really make much difference to me, but I will accept it from you.
Thanks,
Larry. Have a great day.
Thanks, Larry.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So the drama has been diffused to some extent with Christine Ford through legal representation saying now that she will not testify in open committee before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday. She wants an FBI investigation before she would testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Republicans are essentially saying, Monday is your opportunity, Ms. Ford, if you want to make your allegations and answer questions and act in furtherance of the accusations you've already leveled against Brett Kavanaugh. And if you don't do that, and Judge Kavanaugh does and avails himself to senators to answer questions on this topic, then we're going to move forward with a vote after Monday.
Yeah, and even the wishy-washy Republicans like Jeff Flake and, oh my gosh, what's his name? Bob Corker tweeted out, quote-unquote, let's vote. So last night the news broke on Anderson Cooper's CNN show. The letter came out.
Broke before then, but okay.
But they had her on the program after the letter was released.
They have to be investigated. And again, those are things that we can discuss with Senator Grassley. Whether it's the FBI or other investigators, it should be impartial investigators who are nonpartisan.
If you engage in these conversations, if Senator Grassley's staff reaches out to you, as I assume they would, and you have these conversations, and they continue to say point blank, look, this is not something the FBI is involved with, the FBI doesn't want to be involved in this, we are going to have these hearings on Monday, your client can either show up or not, would she show up?
She will talk with the committee. She's not prepared to talk with them at a hearing on Monday.
Wimp.
It's just fork-tongue nonsense.
So
whatever.
They're not going to be there on Monday is the bottom line.
And we'll see. I mean, there's changes on the hour. But the wake of that recoiling from the public's view by the star witness for the left, the left has had to fill that void. And they have. You got Democrat senators who are professionals at virtue signaling and hysteria-inducing commentary. And there was a lot of competition for it yesterday on the cable channels.
Yeah, pick me, pick me.
Kamala Harris on CBS This Morning, former Attorney General.
Very
officer
open-minded.
Of the court, yeah. United States Senator, had this to say.
Would you be able to bring a case like this, 36 years old, to trial?
Potentially, but, you know, I think that the issue here is that this is not about necessarily a criminal investigation. This is also about what we need to do around a background investigation into who Brett Kavanaugh really is.
Yeah. There's been six background investigations by the FBI into who Brett Kavanaugh really is, plus hours upon hours of testimony where Kamala Harris and her colleagues had the opportunity to inquire on the full range of topics as to who Brett Kavanaugh is, in addition to a long career, including a dozen years on the D.C. Court of Appeals. That gives you some insight into who Brett Kavanaugh is and what his professional record is and what his judgment calls have been. But that's not good enough. By the way, there is no court in the land where Kamala Harris could bring this case, this as a criminal matter. It's absurd statement.
It's so stupid.
It's an absurd statement but for an officer of the court to make.
Right, and she should know better. Doesn't she know the law? Wasn't she the top attorney in the state of California?
She also suggested that she's wants to hear, you know, the Monday hearing is important because she wants to hear both sides to assess the credibility of each party. Well, sort of. She's already made a decision.
What is your process to determine who's telling the truth here?
Well, listen, I think it's going to be about, it comes down to credibility, to your point, Gail, and it's going to be about listening to what each party has to say. But I believe her. Listen, first of all, anybody who comes forward at this point.
I would call, let's call up the hearing. Kamala, she doesn't have to show up.
But it's weird. I believed her up until her attorney came out with this latest information because I feel she was a real victim of alleged attempted sexual inappropriate conduct, because I'm not saying rape, because that is just dumb, because that is not what happened here, folks. Then she would
what
want
did
to,
happen here? Who knows?
Well, I mean, it's just roughhousing. I don't know. Kids are stupid and they make mistakes and they, you know.
Well, first of all,
but I don't think he was at that party.
You're assuming that what she said happened. I'm not assuming that. And then there's the secondary question of whether Brett Kavanaugh is involved, because the more people she names, the more refutations she generates. Yesterday, Patrick Smith, identified by Ford in her account of what happened, PJ, Patrick J. Smith, responded through his attorney in a letter to the committee. I understand I've been identified by Ford as the person she remembers as PJ, who supposedly was present at the party she described in her statements to the Washington Post. I'm issuing the statement today to make it clear to all involved that I have no knowledge of the party in question, nor do I have any knowledge of the allegations of improper conduct she leveled against Brett Kavanaugh. But the response to that is very simple from the Democrats. Mazie Hirono has the response.
Of course it helps that there are women on that committee, but you know what? I expect the men in this country and the men in this committee, and many of them, believe me, because we all signed on to this letter to demand an FBI investigation, but really, guess who's perpetuating all of these kinds of actions? It's the men in this country, and I just want to say to the men in this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing for a change. Okay, you can see I'm a little upset by this, you know.
Men, we don't know what we did.
Well, we just shut up and step up.
In what regard? Was she talking about Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee that you should shut up and step up?
I'm sorry. She said men in this country.
Oh, okay. So, Dan, what are you going to do about it?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Is this an area where men are even allowed to comment other than to say, you go, girl, to Mazie Hirono's comments, the Democrat senator from Hawaii? Are we allowed to comment beyond supporting Mazie Hirono's caricature of men? And, oh, by the way, remember yesterday when I said that part of this effort of the left is bound up in their obsession with identity politics, undermine a white male Christian. And some people agreed with me. Some people thought, oh, no. Maisie Hirano just told all the men in this country to shut up, do the right thing for a change. But this is not about gender politics. Oh, it's not? It absolutely is. Embedded in everything the left does. Race, religion, sexual, gender and sexual orientation to the extent it would be relevant. Absolutely. Individually and intersectionality-wise, the new bull's-eye philosophy of the left. George and Moni, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is why the Muslims invented stoning. Simple as that.
Okay, okay. All right.
That's a little aggressive.
He's sort of a Sam Kennison-style comic. Megan in the South Side.
Hi, guys. I just think it's, you know, outrageous that this one woman gets to decide who goes on our Supreme Court. I mean, it's like she's trying to single-handedly do this, demanding FBI investigations. I mean, who does she think she is? She doesn't demand FBI investigations.
I know. And there's no physical evidence. It's ridiculous. It's a he said, she said situation from 30 plus years ago. I mean, I honestly think right now that she's a Democratic plant and that this
Absolutely.
Is their ultimate like stall tactic here.
And
I didn't feel that way yesterday.
Well, I agree with you that she probably was assaulted, but I do not think it was by Brett Kavanaugh.
Thank you. A case of mistaken identity.
Megan.
Or maybe there's this thing, you know, that therapists have that's called memory manipulation, where if you watch somebody that you think you know, then you can have hallucinations where you think that, oh, maybe that was a person who did it. I'm not sure. And then she watched his career and he become more powerful and powerful. And then
no,
decided
that,
to say something.
That happened to me. When I used to think for the longest time, up until like 4 or 5 years ago,
yeah,
I started watching Linda Carter in Wonder Woman as a kid, and I thought I was married to her for much of the last 3 decades.
Right.
And then
you found out she's not the mother of your fictitious children, and I know your crush because you wanted to escape with her on the invisible airplane, but it's not going
to
happen.
I wanted she.
I'm so sorry.
She golden lassoed my heart. Mark in Plainfield.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The other point is, even if Kavanaugh is guilty, a single isolated act of innocence when you're a minor should not disqualify him, because he is completely qualified. To paraphrase Johnny Cochran, you must confirm if there is no sperm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Mark, and that contribution. Okay. Appreciate it. Persons, the age of consent in Maryland, between 14 and 16 may consent to sex as long as the other partner's not more than 4 years older. Persons age between 14 and 16 may consent to sex as long as the other partner is not more than 4 years older.
All right, so everything's legal, but there was
17
no
and 15, so they weren't. They were age of consent, according to Maryland law, if that
stumbling,
was the law back then.
Don't you think it was just stumbly, bumbling, roughhousing?
I don't.
Stupid.
I have no idea what it was because, I'm not stipulating to the event as described by Ms. Ford. Maybe it happened, maybe it didn't. But her story has changed, and there have been a number of people that she's identified who've refuted her account. So I don't know what, if anything, happened. I have no idea.
Yeah, and the therapist note, she said 4 people at the party. And then when she told the Washington Post, it was 2. And she didn't know whose house she was at, how she got there, how she got home, who she was with, like girl-wise. So,
Maisie Hirano is letting Dick Blumenthal speak, a senator missing in action. He was on MSNBC yesterday to rah-rah for his female colleagues of the left. Here's what he had to say about the grave danger the nation faces with a Kavanaugh confirmation.
The impact on the United States Supreme Court going forward with this nomination will cast a shadow and stain on an institution that depends for its power on credibility and trust. It has no armies. It has no police force. Mm-hmm. It's obeyed because of its credibility and the American people's belief in its integrity. And this nomination would forever stain the Supreme Court in a way that I think may well be irreparable.
Irreparable damage, an indelible stain on the Supreme Court if Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed. Not Dred Scott versus Sanford. not Korematsu v. U.S., those not indelible stains, those terrible decisions by the high court. It is the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh that would delegitimize the court in perpetuity. Western civilization, as we experience it in the United States, would end with his confirmation. That's the measured remarks of another former chief law enforcement officer of a state, Dick Blumenthal, Connecticut Attorney General, before he descended to the Senate. I know they cannot be shamed. I know they are impervious to embarrassment. But the combination of Harris and Hirano and Blumenthal,
it's embarrassing.
Three stooges.
Oh, that's a good
one. Steve in Evanston, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, hi, Dan and Amy. If she testifies, she'd be under oath, wouldn't she?
Right.
And wouldn't, and so somebody said to her, her attorneys probably said to her, you're going to be under oath, so you better be telling the truth.
Yeah.
And I think that perhaps that's what put the kibosh on the whole, you know, on the whole I'm going to testify thing.
Perhaps, yeah. Thanks for the call,
Steve. I mean, she still has time to change her mind. But I don't know if she wanted
it's a woman's prerogative.
To drop a quick 10, get her hair done, you know, highlight the roots, cut the hair.
Oh my, that is so sexy.
Well, you know, it's true. And if I had to go testify in a big public hearing, I'd worry about those things too. Not dropping the 10, but getting the hair done. And what are you going to wear? And that, oh my gosh, what am I going to say? And it's a lot of pressure, Dan. It's hard to be a woman. Working woman. She's got a family, and now they're having death threats so much that they have to move out of their house.
Yeah. Ralph and Rantoul here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Yeah, here's a shocking alternate theory. It's complete rubbish and totally made up. The Dems have been trolling down at the bottom of the silt in dark, muddy waters looking for some lying fool who would come out with a completely made-up story. And I would, if I were her, if I were a big, fat liar like she probably is, and I'm just going to go out on a limb and say she probably really is, I would hesitate to put my face on TV indelibly forever as a big fat liar, because if anybody has enough guts, they'll eviscerate her in the examination, pretty much like Spector did with Anita Hill, and then, of course, was so guilt-ridden that he had to change parties.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Ralph.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And since it was invoked, Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas.
Oh, yeah. We got to play it.
We'd be remiss if we didn't take a little walk back in history. One of the great things that came out of that saga, number one being Clarence Thomas' confirmation to the high court.
Yeah, but number two, something more important.
Chris Farley's impersonation of Democrat Senator from Alabama, Howell Heflin, who was, I mean, straight out of Dukes of Hazzard.
What porno movie did you talk about?
Well, I mainly spoke about a favorite of mine called the Hindlick Maneuver.
That's a good movie, George.
George.
But do you think hardcore porno is the way to go? Because I feel women prefer a softer porn.
Yes.
Remember Tim Meadows was
Clarence Thomas.
Clarence Thomas.
Yeah, senators really embarrassed themselves in that those exchanges with Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, high-tech lynching for uppity blacks. Remember Clarence Thomas's famous admonition to members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I suspect the senators would similarly afford themselves if this public spectacle goes forward on Monday.
Oh, my gosh. And Kevin Nealon was Joe Biden. And you got to take a look at these pictures. It's pretty funny.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The tariff.
You don't want to call it a tariff war, but it's
skirmish, conflict.
It's escalating.
It's escalating. $200 billion worth of Chinese imports got slapped with a 10% tariff by the Trump administration. spread $200 billion worth of Chinese imports spread across thousands and thousands of products.
And then China slapped back, putting tariffs on meat, clothes, chemicals, auto parts, pretty much everything we buy from China.
Yeah, except the iPhone. Interesting. There's a theory in economics called the tax salience theory that people adjust their consumption habits based on increased price, but where that tax is applied. More likely to adjust their consumption down when a tax is included in the price, which of course is the case with the tariff, versus when sales tax is added on at the cash register, for example. Mm-hmm. Same reason you see sensitivity to gas prices, because it's, you know, kind of widely advertised. It comes out of people's disposable income, and so they're more sensitive to it than they are, say, withholding from their salary that they don't see, they don't have to write a big check for. Or if you pay property taxes out of an escrow account versus having to write a big check.
Right. It's a big difference.
It's
a different kind of pain.
Which is why I think, by the way, and I like to advance legislation in Illinois.
That everyone should not have their taxes escrowed?
Correct. You have to pay your property tax. You have to write a check.
I've tried that.
Wake people up a little bit.
Trying to keep it separate and have an own fund. But if there's an emergency, then you have to dip into that fund, and then you're screwed come property tax time.
Well, so the question is, are we still in this beginning or intermediate phase of short-term pain for long-term gain, the long-term gain being a lower tariff environment across the board, and frankly, suffering a little bit so to really impose punishment on a, well, competitor, but a collaborator as well when it comes to the voluntary exchange of goods and services, particularly goods. Talking about the Chinese, of course. For answers to those questions, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend Steve Moore, chief economist for CNN, Wall Street Journal columnist. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Morning. So is this a new phase in the trade policy of the Trump administration? Are we getting to a more precarious place, or is this just the continued execution, and there's going to be more pain in the short term for that lower tariff environment across the board that Larry Kudlow envisions?
Well, to quote Winston Churchill in 1941, this isn't the beginning of the end, it's the end of the beginning. So we are in the middle stages of this, I guess we could call it a trade war. You're calling it a skirmish battle. But look, this is tit for tat, no question about it. You know, we've imposed $200 billion more on them, and China's immediately retaliated with their own tariffs. Look, that's going to make, I was listening to your discussion, that will make the things that come in from China more expensive. So when you go to Walmart, consumers are going to have to pay a little bit more for stuff.
And you're getting
like
to, you're getting to,
like tariffs.
You're getting to intermediate goods when you're starting to impose tariffs on things like circuit boards. So the price of computers
that's
and electronics.
True. So that means, you know, you were saying that it's not going to affect right immediately the price of the iPhones and so on, but it certainly might. At the end of the day,
how is it that iPhones aren't a part of this? I mean, China slept, but again, meat, clothes, chemicals, auto parts.
Yeah.
Why not the iPhone?
Well, see, this is something that I disagree with pretty strong. Look, I actually do believe it's time to get really tough with China. So, you know, I don't like tariffs, but I don't see any other alternative to get China to behave. And so I think that it is time to get tough with them. But what I don't like, Amy, is this idea of picking winners and losers. And that's what Trump has done here. He's basically saying, you know, oh, well, this will have a tariff, that won't have a tariff. My feeling is if you're going to do a tariff, and I wonder if Dan and Amy, you agree with me on this, if you're going to do the tariff, it should be imposed on everything. Because you had that, I think Tim Cook from Apple was over at the White House, you know, a week ago or so. And then, lo and behold, Apple's, you know, phones aren't, you know, you're not going to have the tariff on those. I think that kind of is too much an insider trading kind of thing. And let's impose it on everything and not pick winners and losers.
But what is the end game, though, in terms of punishing China?
The end game, look, Okay, so that's a great question. What is the objective here? First of all, we are in a tit-for-tat situation, no question about it. And I remember when I was over at the White House many, many, many months ago and spoke briefly with Trump about this, you know, and I said, look, you know, you impose more tariffs on them, they're going to impose more tariffs on us. And his response to that was really interesting. He said, you know, he said, Steve, at some point they're going to run out of bullets. And, you know, what he means by that is that we buy $500 billion a year of goods and services from China. They buy $150 billion from us. So at some point, if it's like $25 billion, you know, we're going to impose 25, you're going to impose 25, at some point, they're going to reach their 150, but they're going to have tariffs on everything that we buy, but we still have, you know, massive amounts of stuff we buy. So I think Trump sees the leverage here. My bottom line here, what has not been reported by most of the media, Dan and Amy, is that China is in a panic right now. Beijing does not know how to deal with Trump. Their economy is really taking a hit from these tariffs. I mean, they're maintaining a stiff upper lip. But, you know, you look at what's happened to their stock market. You look at what's happening to disinvestment in China. You look at how their growth rate has fallen in the last year. They're being hit hard by these tariffs. I don't think they can withstand them, you know, for more than a year or so. So I think this is going to get settled within 6 months.
Don't you feel bad for the auto industry? I mean, they might collapse because if you don't buy a brand new car now, you should not do it in a few months because the price is going to go up.
That depends on what happens with these auto tariffs. That's a whole different issue. And by the way, I'm not in favor. I testified last week in front of the Senate Finance Committee where I basically said the auto tariffs aren't even going to help the auto industry. Did you know the auto industry is not in favor of the auto tariffs?
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. But you know why? Because they buy all these parts from all over the world.
Right.
I mean, when you buy an American car, a Ford, you know, the parts come from Singapore. It's assembled and, you know, the steel comes from Canada. It's assembled in Mexico. I mean, these cars are really internationally made, whether it's got a Nissan, you know, whether it's a Nissan or whether it's a Ford. And so what a lot of these companies are saying is, look, if you impose these auto tariffs and the steel tariffs, you're going to make these cars more expensive, man. That are made in America, and you may make foreign cars more attractive.
But the implications, though, of inducing slow growth, or maybe go so far as to say inducing a recession in China with a market of a billion people.
Look, I just don't think China can withstand the pain very long. Although that's not a knowable thing, right? I mean, Beijing, you've got Xi is now president for life,
so he
doesn't have to face voters. But look, it's a question. The question you're asking, Dan, is what is their pain threshold? How much are they willing to let their economy falter? And incidentally, a lot of this, I'm told from the China people who are doing the negotiating for the United States, who know a lot more about China than I do, say a big part of this for Beijing and for President Xi is just saving face, right? They don't want to be seen as folding like a cheap tent to Trump. I think in the end of the day, they're going to have to do that. Now, look, I will tell your listeners this with almost 100% certainty. Donald Trump is not retreating on this. He's not going to back off. I mean, China's either going to have to make major concessions here. And by the way, they should. They have huge restraints on our ability to sell goods in their country. They're stealing $300 billion of intellectual property every year. They're building up their military in a huge, huge, dangerous way. I mean, it is time to get tough with China. It is time for the United States to use our leverage, which we have a lot of leverage over them, to get them to start behaving.
But
I don't think Trump will back down.
Right. I mean, look, but if we induce some sort of Tiananmen Square moment because China's economy is crashing, what does that mean for the United States economy? What does it mean for the global economy when you're talking about, admittedly, a communist developing nation, but a billion people?
Well, that's a great point. Look, first of all, you know, the United States has benefited from trade with China, no question about it, for the last 20. I mean, every time you go to Walmart, you get, you know, low prices every day, and half of that stuff is made in China, so that benefits consumers. There's no doubt about it. You and I and Milton Friedman agree on that, no question about it. I think what Trump is saying is, look, we've benefited, but they've benefited a lot more. I mean, we basically subsidized their economy, you know, through allowing them to have free trade with us, even though they don't allow us to have free trade with them. And Trump is basically saying, like, the jig is up on that. You're now a developed country. You're now a world economic leader, you know, right beyond the United States. You know, it's time to put your big boy pants on and act like a civilized, advanced nation, which means stop stealing, stop cheating. I talk to CEOs of companies all the time who say it's almost impossible, Dan, for them to do business in China because you have to give up your trade secrets. You have to, you know, give up ownership sometimes of your company. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's preposterous, and we can't live with that any longer. But you're right. Now, look, if China, I don't want China to go in the wrong direction. I don't want them to go in the direction of Tiananmen Square. We want them to move towards more freedom and more open markets. And unfortunately, in the last 6 or 7 years, they've moved in the opposite direction.
Right. That's a big gamble with communists for life, as we saw with the Soviet Union.
Dan, I'm going to be the questioner this morning. What is the alternative? You know, what if we're not going to do these tariffs, what are we going to do to get China to start behaving?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this before. My position, as you understand it,
yeah,
free marketeer, is always it pays to be preemptively free trade. So we should lower tariffs because we should look at policies that are in the best interest of the American consumer, not you know, kind of the artificial construction of a U.S. economy versus the Chinese economy. I'm interested in the 330 million Americans and their quality of life, not some abstraction. And so that's the approach I would take.
And look, I don't disagree with that. I think my position has changed a little bit. You're kind of arguing, you know, for a unilateral free trade, we should be Hong Kong, right? And,
yes.
And that certainly worked out well for them. I guess my response to that would be, look, an even better option would be to get China to buy more of our stuff. I mean, it helps American farmers, it helps American workers, and you know, why not? Why shouldn't we use our leverage to make, if we're going to low, all Trump is saying is we want a level playing field here. If we're going to open up our markets to you, the deal is supposed to be you're going to open up your markets to us, and you haven't done it. And by the way, the Europeans, you know, have been deficient in that area. You know, he wants the same thing with Canada. And by the way, he's winning on this. That's the other thing. He got a deal with Mexico. He's going to get a deal with Canada. That's better for the U.S. We're going to get potentially zero tariff option in many goods and services with Europe. So we may end up with a more free trade regime. I know you're skeptical, Dan.
Well, I hope so.
But I think we may end up with more free trade at the end of the day.
All right, I'm counting on you and Larry Kudlow. You guys better deliver. He is Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, chief economist for CNN. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right, have a great day.
You too. Take care.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
All right, I've been teasing this story for a while, but there's a man in Gilbert, Arizona. His name's Paul Anthony Machacha. He's 31 years old, and he posed as his mom online saying, my son needs help. He has Down syndrome. He needs help being bathed and have his diaper changed. So the entire summer, three young, good-looking caregivers were hired to bathe him and assist him. One lady said she was there at least 30 times. They also asked the caregivers to meet him at restaurants to change his dirty diapers in public bathrooms. So one of the
women,
they said he became aroused during baths. And so one of the caregivers became suspicious, followed him home from a restaurant once, discovered, saw that he had parents, talked to them. They said, our son doesn't have Down syndrome. What are you talking about?
So he was impersonating a man with Down syndrome.
Yeah, in order to get help bathing and having his diaper changed. He's been charged with fraud and sexual abuse charges, and he goes to court next week. But he did tell the judge, well, I don't have Down syndrome, but I have special needs and I have a low IQ level. So that was his defense. But I think
latter point, that he's got a low IQ.
Well, he was looking for love in all the wrong places.
I don't know.
Meet me at Denny's. Meet me at the Waffle House to change my diaper. Gross.
I think both the sound effects and your reaction are missing the kind of central problem with the story.
I know what the central problem is.
Okay.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, here's the senator at the center of Christine Ford's allegations against Brett Kavanaugh. Now not going to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee on Monday, but Dianne Feinstein, DiFi, That's who received the letter back in July. She held it because Christine Ford at the time wanted to preserve her anonymity until she didn't this week. This weekend into this week. How is this going to proceed? Well, DiFi doesn't seem to know what's true or not true.
This is a woman, and I really believe, who's been profoundly impacted by this. Now, I can't say everything's truthful. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
That says...
Nobody does seem to know. And so, of course, the Dems want to use that to say, oh, we've got to slow down the process, have an investigation, get to the bottom of this, so on and so forth. Everybody understands this is a stall tactic. Get text.
Right.
It's a stall. It's a delay. Of course it is. That's not going to happen. The stall tactic is a bluff, in my estimation. And, you know, hey, look, if they can bluff a couple of Republican senators who are spine challenged.
Yeah, but none of them are taking the bait.
Well, they did initially. That's why we've had this delay.
And I did initially, too, but I've changed my opinion about this whole situation.
So if they can get the delay past the midterms, well, then great. But that's really a bluff. What they know is that they don't have the votes. Kavanaugh's going to be confirmed unless they come up with something a lot more compelling than what has been put into the public arena so far from Ms. Ford and her allies. But now they have this issue, the Me Too issue, another cultural touchstone to use in the last 50 days to the November 6th election. Bobby Jindal had a good piece in the Wall Street Journal today about this, how Democrats have been successful to some extent and could be again. They certainly have been in Illinois in having suburbanites, but particularly suburban women, particularly college educated suburban women, vote cultural virtue signaling over their economic interests. And that's what this is going to be. Me Too. Look, the Republicans treated Christine Ford so poorly. They don't take sexual harassment seriously, discarding the fact that most of the highest profile cases, legitimate cases of that have been borne out by the Me Too movement of predatory men are men of the left in Hollywood and media and so forth. Just forgetting all that, because Democrats will just push right past that. And Republicans are so inept on this that they won't make Democrats wear the jacket. But that's really what this is. You can't vote your economic interests. If you vote your economic interests, Democrats lose. So we've got to get them to vote on something else. Cultural touchstones. And how successful have the cultural Marxists been in flipping over cowardly center-rightists over the last half a decade, much less decade, on everything from immigration policy to marriage redefinition to gun control.
Right.
And so that's the real play here. The delay tactic is just a bluff. Boy, if we could get that, super. We don't expect it, but this is the real play that we're making in terms of trying to frame the election. And this is how Christine Ford is useful in pursuit of that. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Ed Morrissey. He is, of course, senior editor for hotair.com and a columnist for The Week. Ed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So what do you think about the contention I just laid out?
Well, I think certainly this has been a delay tactic from the beginning. And what I find very interesting is that on Monday morning, you had one of Ford's attorneys, Deborah Katz, who was going on to all of the morning shows saying, my client is ready to testify. We need to reopen the hearing so that the committee can hear her story and force, you know, Kavanaugh to address that and et cetera, et cetera. And then Chuck Grassley, taking her at her word, was trying to reach Dr. Ford to arrange the hearing, and they set the hearing for Monday, which is, at the time, was a week off. And if you have somebody who's willing and ready to testify as the attorney represented on national television in multiple appearances, that shouldn't have been a problem. And yet they weren't returning emails, they weren't returning phone calls until late last night when they sent a letter to the committee saying, no, you have to have an FBI investigation first. And which is absurd. The FBI doesn't have jurisdiction in this. If this incident took place at all, It took place 36 years ago in a private residence between two minors, or three minors, depending on how you view the allegation.
But do you think it even took place?
It's not a federal crime. The FBI doesn't have jurisdiction on that.
Yeah, but the jurisdiction thing, though, you know, this is like the process argument that Republicans make, and they make a mistake, I think.
I'm pointing this out to strengthen your argument.
Well, but my
demanding
point.
Demanding an FBI investigation is a stall tactic. It's never going to happen.
No, I understand. But what I'm saying is that, look, they're couching it, and this is, you know, just consistent with doing a background check on a nominee for the Supreme Court of the United States, like the FBI has already done a half dozen of them, which also redounds to the benefit of Republicans, the six background checks. How many background checks do we have to do on the same guy in the same time proximity? But my point is to say, you know, that they just say, well, the FBI is, this is the kind of stuff the FBI looks into. And rather than saying the FBI doesn't have jurisdiction, which is true, and I take your point, say, look, this is what they're trying to do, is explain the Democrats' ruse here and provide the overheated hyperventilation coming from the Blumenthals and the Hiranos and the Harrises to substantiate that claim and put it back on them that way.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but look, they're going to do that anyway. they were going to do that regardless of whether Ford came forward or not. So the best way to get through this thing is to just call the vote for tomorrow as it was originally scheduled. Grassley should call the vote tomorrow, and if Democrats want to show up, that's fine. If they don't want to show up, that's fine. Move this thing to the Senate floor and get it over with. Because as we saw with Thomas, the sooner you get this thing over with, the better off you are.
But Judge Kavanaugh wants to defend his honor, to, you know, tell his story. Could he do that on Monday without her coming forward as well?
Oh, I mean, that's up to Chuck Grassley, but I think that'd be I think that's a dumb idea.
Okay.
Why would you give 10 Democrats a total of 300 minutes to pound you with all sorts of cross-examination questions if the accuser isn't going to show up? No, I think the fact that she's not going to show up moots the whole thing.
Right.
Just close it out, get rid of it. There's no reason to force Kavanaugh to go up there. He's already denied it publicly. And if she's not going to stand up there and make her allegations public, then there's no reason for him to defend himself.
Although the flip side, I mean, I don't know what Kavanaugh's perspective is, but if it was me, boy, and I was innocent of the charges, boy, I would want to go up there and tear them apart. And in the absence of any countervailing evidence and denials from people that she names in her allegations to provide context and substantiation against Kavanaugh, I would bring on Cory Booker and Dick Blumenthal and Di Fi and the rest of them.
Yeah, but you think they're going to fight fair? Do you think they're going to sit there and say, well, gee, I think that you're right? No, they're going to say, when were you, you know, how much did you drink when you were a teenager? Did you ever pass out when you were a teenager? Did you throw up in somebody's car as a teenager? Because that was something that Mark Judge described in a memoir that he wrote. I mean, it's going to be stupid. So, you don't show up for that at all.
So just,
you know,
stay
if
away.
She's not going to show up, cancel it. It's pointless.
Ed, do you think there's anything believable about her story, or do you see her as just a Democratic plant?
No, you know, I think there's a couple different ways you can look at this. Maybe she's got the wrong guy. Maybe
that's
this did happen to her. I mean, it's not like some stuff like this never happens. It happens quite a bit when teenagers get together and drink. But maybe she got the wrong guy. Maybe she confused him with somebody else. She had been drinking as well, according to her own story in the Washington Post. So those things happen, you know, and. If she got the wrong guy, she got the wrong guy right off the bat, and it stuck with her for, you know, 36 years. I mean, you can there are charitable ways to look at this, but what I would say is that the Democrats have exploited this for politically from the moment they got it. Dianne Feinstein, the proper thing to do when Dianne Feinstein got that information would have been to share it with Chuck Grassley immediately,
right,
and then to address it in private with Kavanaugh, in a closed session with Kavanaugh, or even in the public hearing with Kavanaugh. And they didn't bring it up at all until after the hearings were over and they were approaching the vote. They didn't want to take the vote. I mean, this whole thing, it starts with Dianne Feinstein, and it just deconstructs from there.
And she had the letter, and she had Kavanaugh in her office, and she already knew about the letter and had it in her possession and didn't say a word to him.
Of course they're jackpotting him. Of course they're jackpotting him. I mean, that goes without, I mean, it doesn't go without saying it needs to be said. You're absolutely right to expose exactly what they've done and what they've done wrong and how disingenuous they are. So, there's no question that that's the case. And what you said about sharing it with Grassley, say, hey, if she wants to protect her anonymity, fine, we'll protect her anonymity, but I still have to share it with the committee chairman. We got to talk about this.
Right. The committee chairman is the person who should have had that information. And look, I mean, if the issue is, hey, if they were really concerned about the idea of, wow, we might be putting a potential rapist in the Supreme Court, then you tell the person running the committee.
Yeah,
you might
want
to tell the White House about this and see if they want to find somebody else to put up here.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. And that tells me that they weren't really interested in this in terms of jurisprudent hygiene, right?
Yeah, right.
They were interested in it as a political attack and a way to defeat the White House, and they held on to it until the last minute to do it.
He is Ed Morrissey, senior editor for HotAir.com and columnist for The Week. Ed, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
We're talking about this. Ed Morrissey disagreed with me. Man, I know the easy way for Brett Kavanaugh, if his accuser doesn't testify, to say, well, there's no need for me to testify, call the vote, get confirmed, be done with it. But to me, this is a moment where you can get more than that. And frankly, I would want more than that. You want to come at me? You want to try and destroy my reputation, both professionally and personally? Then let's have at it straight away. And I would say I'm going to be there on Monday morning. Whoever wants to ask me questions, do your damnedest, and I'm ready to hold court, literally. Take your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Let's go to Lynn in Glenview. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Dan. I think this is just nothing but a stalling tactic, and it makes me sick to my stomach. I can't believe I've gotten so upset about this, but I have. And if we don't keep following the rules that we have had for years and years and years in the Senate, the country's not going to be the same. I mean, I think this is terrible.
Thanks for the call.
No, I agree, too, because I felt sick to my stomach. When I heard this, I went, oh, no. Oh, my gosh. And then she came out. Then I read, the entire Washington Post article, and my stomach sank. Because this is not the person who we've known to know as Judge Brett Kavanaugh.
Hey, Dick Blumenthal, I saw you on MSNBC. You said my confirmation would be a stain on the high court. You're a disgrace. Vote against. You're already going to vote against me. You've already made your decision, so I don't care. Let's talk about this. Let's talk case law.
Let's talk about Kamala Harris already saying, well, I believe her.
Right. I want to hear both sides to establish who's credible, but I already believe her and don't believe her. I mean, it's nonsense. Senator Hirano, all men in America should just shut up and step up. What does that even mean? I step up every day by supporting my family, by being a volunteer for my children's
youth basketball team
serving with distinction on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals and throughout my career. Let's go. Who else? Cory Booker and your imaginary friend. You next. Hey, you want to have T-Bone ask me some questions, Senator Booker? Bring it. I mean, this is a way to
just
tear
stick it to
up
him.
These frauds, demagogues, virtue signaling ignoramuses. Put it on public display for the nation to see. Say, this is who you want to turn power over to in this country? These people? John in Romeoville.
Come on, Dan. Don't hold back. No, you're right. They should have that meeting on Monday. And no matter what happens, immediately after that, hold the vote. The Dems have been exposed. Give it back right to them.
Thanks for the call, John. It would also maybe provide an example for Republicans to step up and be a little bit more pronounced, have a little bit more fight in them, to see somebody else do the fighting for them. Joe in Villa Park.
Dan, I could not disagree with you more.
Okay.
When you play poker and beat somebody, you don't lend them chips to get back into the game. If you thought the original hearing was a circus, wait till you see this. Mr. Kavanaugh, when did you stop beating your wife? It's going to be horrible.
No, and just ask him about drinking.
Make himself look better.
And how
well,
did
drinking? You know what I mean.
How did Kavanaugh hold up in that hearing? Who looked good and who looked bad?
This, I agree with you on that, but this is an opportunity. The probability is he's going to look. There's a chance he could look bad in this. Why even roll the dice? It makes no sense at all.
Yeah, because there are things that are. Thanks for the call, Joe. I understand what you're saying, and that's the safe play. Totally get it. Sometimes you reach for the brass ring, and I understand a Supreme Court nominee getting confirmed. This is a huge deal. You shouldn't be reckless with that. But this is a guy, I think, who has the capacity, not as, you know, vociferous and antagonistic as I was just describing it, but has the capacity and the temperament to deconstruct and expose those demagogues on that committee who represent the power structure of the Democrat Party and do a lot of good in the process, a lot of good that as such opportunities rarely afford because of the circus they've created around an accuser who won't even show up. And, you know, and the famous Ray Donovan invocation, where do I go to get my reputation back after he was acquitted of federal corruption charges in the 80s? Remember Reagan's former labor secretary?
And according to NBC, he wants to testify. He wanted to testify the next day to get his reputation back.
I would.
I would, too.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, in our continuing series of bringing you the candidates for mayor of the city of Chicago. We've had Lori Lightfoot, we've had Willie Wilson, we've had Paul Vallis.
Troy LaRavier. Well,
not as a candidate for mayor.
In the early stages when he was thinking about it.
I've reached out to Bill Daley. I promised that I would speak slowly so he could understand, and I wouldn't use multisyllabic words. So we'll see if we can get him on. Jerry Joyce's kid is still circulating as a potential candidate as well. So we'll bring you as many of the candidates as we can who want to have an intelligent discussion. And today's installment is Gary McCarthy. He, of course, the former superintendent of the Chicago Police Department for a time under outgoing mayor Rahm Emanuel. His website, Gary, two R's, G-A-R-R-Y, GaryForMayor.com. And we're pleased to be joined by Gary McCarthy. Gary, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning. So we've got the Van Dyke trial going on, and obviously you were fired by Rahm about a week after that video surfaced. And there seems to be some conflicting things about the responsibility for how that case was handled from beginning to trial, both with respect to the release of the videotape, the preemptive payment to the family. Can you give us your encapsulation of the Laquan McDonald shooting, what you did, what Rahm did, and your perspective on how it was handled?
It's not conflicting at all, Dan, if people would just listen to the process. The bottom line is I was accountable, but I did not have authority to do the things that people emotionally wanted to see happen. I was not in charge of the discipline system. Eddie Johnson is in the same position today. He could only make a recommendation to the police board for termination or suspensions of more than 30 days. I was not in charge of the investigation. Same position today. It was IPRA. Today it's COPA. Yet I was accountable for the behavior of the officers. It can't work like that. That's a poor business model. The bottom line has it that people don't understand the only thing I could do by Illinois state law, not by contractual obligation, was to put that officer on paid desk duty. The other thing that people need to know is that the cover-up of that video did not happen on the criminal side. The U.S. attorney and the state's attorney were in charge of that investigation working with IPRA. The Chicago Police Department was uninvolved in that. And the Corporation Counsel, Rahm Emanuel's attorney, on the civil side, implemented cover-up by giving the family $5 million to not release the video. That happened outside my purview, as did the entire investigation. So it's a failed business model that needs to be changed. You can't have accountability without authority.
But
that's what happens. And Eddie's in the same position today.
But just on that point, I want to make sure I understand what you just said. On the civil side, Rahm Emanuel and his corp counsel, the $5 million payout, you consider that an attempt to cover up what happened and cover up the video that documented at least some of what happened?
It's not an attempt. It was a cover-up to prevent that video from being released. It was, and by the way, the timing of it, and I forget the exact dates, but I found all of this out over the last year and a half after I was terminated. The attorneys for Laquan McDonald's family approached the city sometime around March 27th or 28th of 2015, right in the heat of the runoff with Chewy Garcia. It was in early April that the Corporation Council was in front of the City Council's Finance Committee to get approval for an agreement to give the family $5 million with the caveat that the video not be released. That is breakneck speed. That has never happened in city government ever. And the other thing that's really disturbing is the fact that they did not file a lawsuit.
Right.
Now, the city does not give out money if you don't file a lawsuit. Yet this is what the Corp Counsel, Steve Patton, told the City Council Finance Committee. And at one point during his testimony, which I've given to a number of news outlets and individuals, during his testimony, he's asked a direct question. In your opinion, the officer acted within the scope of his employment, and Patton says, that's right. I'm sorry, but murder is not within the scope of a police officer's employment. And it's very clear that there was a rush job put through the process to keep that video from being released to make sure that the mayor won that election. And that happened on the civil side, not the criminal side, which is what people are confused about.
And then Mayor Emanuel uses you as the fall guy. Have you spoken to him since then, and has he responded to your mayoral bid?
No, I haven't spoken to him at all.
Wow.
He didn't call to congratulate me on the birth of my son. He didn't check to see if I was okay. You know, after 35 years in policing and being a leader in the country in policing, you know, that was a pretty traumatic event for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've spoken to a lot of executives who went through the same thing. And it's a traumatizing thing to think that, you know, you're spending 35 years trying to stop people from dying. We're having success here in Chicago. We had 50-year lows in the murder rate, and all of a sudden, for some political gain for somebody else, your career gets terminated. And it's happened to friends of mine in Minneapolis. It happened to a guy in Baltimore, Tony Batts, a friend of mine. It happened to Greg Sir out in San Francisco. And there's no political solutions for practical problems, but that's what we keep trying to do.
So why, then, are you running for mayor? What do you want to do? What do you want? How do you want to help the city?
Well, I mean, I'm running for mayor because people came to me somewhere around 2 years ago and started pushing me in that direction. I initially turned them down. They kept coming back, and every time they came back, they came with more people. Mm-hmm. And eventually, my public service DNA got to me. and I want to draw that distinction. I am a public servant. I am not a politician. And I can't stand by and watch what's happening in this city knowing how to fix it. And the way we need to fix it is managing city government like a business, not the political things that we've done, which have led to failure. We applied business management to policing, and guess what? It works. I helped implement performance-based government in New York City in the NYPD. And look at where New York is. A city three times the size of Chicago last year had 290 murders, and we had 770
mm-hmm.
in 2016. It's unacceptable, the accepted practices here. And that has to change. And people tell me it's never going to change. And my response is, it's not going to change unless somebody changes it. And I'm perfectly willing to do that. People in Chicago have told me over and over again, it's time for change. What we're doing is not working. It's really obvious.
So your last full year as the police chief, 2015, there were 3,000 people shot. There were 511 homicides. Now, as you point out, those numbers, the murder numbers spiked 60% the next year after you were gone to more than 800. But obviously 3,000 shot, 500 murders in Chicago, as you were just describing the stats in New York, that's a person shot every 2 hours, 3 hours, a person murdered every 17 hours. That's unacceptable, too. So what were you doing that you think is working and that would need to be scaled to bring down the incidence of violent crime in the city?
Well, first of all, let's be clear about something. Compare my last 3 years as superintendent to the last 3 years since I've been terminated. There's more than 456 dead people that weren't dead before. 456 more murders in this city over the last 3 years. Talk about unacceptable. And what we're doing, and Dan, let's be clear. This whole political dynamic that started with Ferguson and expanded to Baltimore and New York City and San Francisco and other places across the country, including here, Chicago, has handcuffed the police and emboldened criminals all at the same time.
Yep.
And we have to have some truth-telling. We have to face facts. You know, this consent decree in the Department of Justice coming into the city, the excuse is all about excessive use of force by the Chicago Police Department, yet nobody ever checked to look. The fact is, CPD's use of force is exactly on par with the rest of the country in policing. Now, that's not a victory, but it's also not off the scale. And because of a couple of bad incidents, we flipped over the table, and as a result, the whole system has gone south. We stopped policing. And officers are, I'm not going to say afraid, but they're wary to get involved. And we hear it over and over again. I don't want to be the next headline.
Yep.
They're worried about their families. They're worried about their pensions. And, you know, they're being extra careful. And the criminals, at the same time, have been emboldened.
But
political landscape has to change.
And you're essentially saying a Mayor McCarthy is going to provide the political civilian leadership to back the police officers, to have them, number one, having confidence that they have backing, and then number two, making them more productively, legally aggressive in law enforcement.
I guess that's true. But, you know, it has to do with having difficult discussions that nobody else wants to have. We have to talk about race and how we got here in the first place. Nobody wants to talk about race. It's the third rail. Mm-hmm. Yet the extreme, you know, I chuckle when I hear people say the term reestablishing trust. You can't reestablish something you never had. And if you look at the African-American history in this country, starting with slavery, then black codes, segregation, Jim Crow, were all racist laws that were written into the law that were enforced by the white police officer. So that narrative of distrust is not going to be overcome. That 400-year history is not going to be overcome because we put on body cameras. It has to do with the social economic divide that exists in this country and the segregation that we talk about that still exists here in Chicago because of the way that it was created. And then what do? We close schools and pull social services from the places that we need it the most. And then we wonder why gun violence is up. It's all interrelated, whether it's the crime, the education system, the taxes, and the economy here. It's a three-legged stool, and we need a holistic approach to take care of that. It has to do with good policing, functional policing. It also has to do with legitimacy in government, Dan.
Okay.
You know, you can't change the law for one day to skirt municipal law, which is what we did to appoint the police superintendent after I was terminated.
Well, Dan and I are both...
And then you want the police to be legit.
Yeah, Dan and I are both Chicagoans, and I know that we want safe streets. But also, what are we going to do about our financial woes on the pension debt for police and firefighters? And CPS is in debt. Our county's in debt. Do you have a financial plan to get us out of debt?
Absolutely. Absolutely, we do. It starts by stopping political spending. And I'm gonna give you a $252 million example. $95 million police academy that we don't need would cost $180 million because nothing gets done on time or on budget. We don't need that academy. That's a bright, shiny object, so the mayor could say, I'm all about police reform. The academy building does not train the officers. The trainers train the officers. The facility that we have is more than adequate. If we need more, we could do it a lot cheaper by rehabbing some abandoned buildings. So that's $180 million. The bike path, the Navy Pier flyover, it's a great thing. But by the same token, I could find a better way to spend $30 million that was budgeted for that. That now is up to $62 million, and it's not finished. Yeah. And then on the day,
Dan looks at it every
74
day.
People, yeah. And then on the day after 74 people are shot over the weekend, you don't announce a $10 million investment in the Riverwalk, which is pretty fantastic as it is.
Yeah.
So that's $252 million of political spending that we don't have to do.
Well,
that's first of all.
Okay.
Second of all is to use. I'm sorry, Dan. It's not a yes or no.
Go ahead. Second of all
is to use TIF funding the way that the law prescribes to use it, which is for blighted communities, not Block 37, and then getting campaign donations from developers. It's unacceptable the way that the finances here have been run, and we're going to have to do some forensic accounting because we do have an issue, a huge issue, but we have less of a revenue issue and more of a spending issue.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about the spending issue part of it. And by the way, that flyover by Navy Pier has taken longer to build than the Golden Gate Bridge. But but on pensions, police and fire pensions, both of them are about 20% funded. You've got Rahm Emanuel wants to do a $10 billion pension bond scheme on his way out the door. More borrowing against tomorrow to pay for yesterday's obligations. What do you do about pension funds that are circling the drain? More borrowing like Rahm is proposing or something else?
No, you don't borrow to pay your debt. That's like paying your Visa card with your MasterCard.
Right. Yeah.
The first thing we have to do is get the city into the black. And seriously, you know, we're only talking about things that we know about, which is the tip of the iceberg. I don't know where the money has gone in this city. And based on what I do know about the way that it's been spent, it's going to be inappropriate, and that has to be addressed. But the pension issue, the $10 billion bonding, is only going to cover the benefits part. It's not going to pay the deficit of 10 years of not putting into that pension. So it's putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. And it's another thing that simply shouldn't be done. You know, we have to stop borrowing to pay our debt. We have to have real budgets that mean something that we actually adhere to. Have you ever watched the budget hearing? In City Hall,
it has nothing to do with the budget. Right.
It has nothing to do with the budget. I mean, it's really folly, and we've got to stop that. We've got to have real budgets, not blow through them, hold people accountable, stop borrowing to pay our debt, and get down to brass tacks and start managing. Nothing is being managed in this city, and I really pride myself on being a manager. I was at the top of city government for 16 years in three major cities in this country. I know how to manage, and that's what we need to do. I see it in everything that happens here, whether they're digging up the streets during rush hour or whether or not we have six double buses back-to-back-to-back-to-back on LaSalle Street every morning blocking the box. These are just things that are not being managed that need to be managed. That's what we have to do in this city in every regard.
He is Gary McCarthy, former Chicago police superintendent, now a candidate for mayor of Chicago come February and April, if he makes the runoff, assuming there is one. Gary, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to talking to you and tackling some more issues next time. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.